and welcome to this week's edition of the Breakout Hockey Program. My name is Adam Summers, and as always, I'd like to thank you very much for joining us here on the program. If you have any sort of hockey-related question, whether it relates to anything we've talked about specifically on the show, or anything else you want to get off your chest, a question or comment about all things puck, feel free to send an email to breakouthockey@radiostar.com, or if you want to follow along and get in touch with the program on Twitter, you can do so as always at twitter.com/Adam_Summers. That's @Adam_Summers. So, as always, with that, want to get into the content of the program. I also want to mention, as we are rapidly winding down the active 2010-2011 NHL season, wanted to remind everybody that we will be here throughout the course of the offseason. Doing at least two shows a month is the plan right now, possibly more, depending on events as they warrant. But we will definitely be here throughout the off season, whether it be actually the NHL draft, working on a few things, possibly having a guest to help guide us through the draft, which will be taking place in late June, just after the end of the National Hockey League Stanley Cup Finals. So, we will talk about that. We will certainly get into probably the show right after the draft. I would imagine we'll have a show the following week where we will get into the particularly the UFA, the unrestricted free agency class, and what may happen there. So a lot to discuss. Obviously, throughout the rest of the offseason, we will discuss all things hockey. But before we get to the offseason, as I record this, it is the eve of the Stanley Cup Finals. Let me just say this. I am doing this show with my professional broadcaster hat on. If I was, say, doing this show as simply a fan, I may lament the fact that the Stanley Cup Finals have come down to the two teams that at the beginning of the season, if someone had asked me as a fan, what two teams would I least like to see play each other in the Stanley Cup Finals, it's very likely I would have said the Vancouver Canucks and the Boston Bruins. For long-time listeners, you may be able to guess why, if I was doing this show as a fan, I would say such a thing, that being the fact that the two teams that I follow the most in the other many hours throughout the week as a fan would be the Chicago Blackhawks and the Montreal Canadiens. So the fact that what I consider to be the two most bitter rivals of those two teams that I follow, I think it's pretty obvious that with all apologies to the Toronto Maple Leafs and their fan base, I think it's pretty obvious the Boston Bruins are far and away the most bitter rival of the Montreal Canadiens. And even though I think a lot of Chicago Blackhawks fans, and rightfully so to an extent, would say that historically the biggest rival of the Blackhawks is the Detroit Red Wings, it's hard to argue that with this current crop of players, or at least dare I use the marketing phrase in Chicago, the core group of players of the Blackhawks and the core group of players of the Canucks, I certainly have not seen a more bitter rivalry in quite some time for the Blackhawks. So not only has it come down to those two teams, the Bruins and the Canucks, you look back and in the first round, I believe it was on a Tuesday night, Game 7, the Chicago Blackhawks tied the game late in the third period against the Canucks, and then lost in overtime. One day later, the Montreal Canadiens tied Game 7 late, and then lost to the Boston Bruins in overtime. And so you have the two teams in the finals having gone to Games 7 in overtime in Round 1, personally against the teams that I have the most affinity for. So if I was to do this show as a fan, I may be a little bit aggravated, but I am a broadcast professional, darn it. So I'm going to talk about the finals. I'm going to talk about them in some depth, but I'm going to do that in a few minutes because I do want to get into a very topical subject, something that we've talked about from the very beginning, something we talked about going back to the very early episodes of this program back in the late summer when we were talking about the possibilities of relocation. At that point, obviously centered much more around Phoenix, but we did bring up the possibility of Atlanta on the show as well. and something we talked about in much detail, something I'm sure everybody listening to this program already knows about, the fact that the Atlanta Thrashers will be moving, barring the rubber stamp, or pending the rubber stamp, I should say, on June 21st at the Board of Governors meeting. The Atlanta Thrashers will be moving to Winnipeg to become the Winnipeg or Manitoba something. Maybe if you're listening to this show at some point later in the week, maybe the name has already been given, but all indications today at the press conference in Winnipeg with True North Sports and Entertainment and the National Hockey League were that they are not going to necessarily rush into a decision in terms of naming the would-be Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, maybe the Manitoba Falcons has been something that's been thrown around. Maybe it's something altogether different. It will not be the Thrashers themselves, as the outgoing Thrashers ownership has made it clear that they retained the Thrashers name. I'm not sure that there was a groundswell of support to have that name go with the team to Winnipeg, but in any event, it seems as though it won't. I've talked about this on previous shows that this is a situation, like most in life, where it's very easy to look at things in a very black and white, cut and dried. Atlanta fans didn't support the team, bad hockey town, Winnipeg will, and everything's great. Now on the surface, okay, I can buy into the validity of that to an extent. I think that you can certainly make the argument, and I have made it many, many times in the past, that the Winnipeg market, that Winnipeg does deserve a team, that from strictly a fan support standpoint, they never should have lost a team. But as we all know, the regular fan support is only one piece of the puzzle for a franchise succeeding. On the other hand, it's very easy, as I said, to just say, oh, there's not enough fans in Atlanta, they should have moved. What Atlanta Thrashers fans will tell you is that there is a large fan base there, but that they became so disillusioned, particularly when the Atlanta Spirit Group, that group of 5, 6, 7, 8 different owners who all eventually went into litigation with each other as the years went by, that ownership ran the team into the ground. That is also a bit of an oversimplification in that, yes, the ownership group certainly did not do the team or the fans many favors. I come at it from a little bit different of a perspective. As I've talked about on this show before, I regularly sat in the United Center where on a good night on a Wednesday, regardless of what they announced the crowd as, let's say for a midweek, let's say a Wednesday game against the Columbus Blue Jackets in the United Center, a couple years back, you'd have maybe 5,000 people actually coming through the turnstiles. I get when people say they can't do this. I, to an extent, get where they're coming from, but I am from the school of thought that if you are a fan of your team, you are a fan of your team in good times and in bad. And I know some will disagree with me, but in good ownership and in bad ownership. And while I'm far from the biggest fan of Gary Bettman, and I don't necessarily buy into the statement 100%. Certainly, I don't buy into it as being the only reason, or even the biggest reason as to why the Atlanta Spirit Group was not able to find local ownership to keep the team in Atlanta. I do find a kernel of truth in what Gary Bettman said I believe it was last week on his radio show on the NHL Hour, that if you want there to be an NHL team in your city, it's probably not the best practice to protest whatever problems you have with the organization by, in mass, not going to the games. Because Gary Bettman went a little bit far, I think, actually went quite far in terms of making a one-to-one linked to that being the deciding reason that a team or that an owner would not want to buy the team. I don't necessarily believe that to be the case, but I don't really know what it accomplishes, because you hear people say all the time, well, if we stay home, they'll give us a competitive product. I hear that all the time here in Chicago. I'm not a huge baseball fan. Even though I have grown up in the southern suburbs of Chicago, I am more of a Cubs fan. Obviously, more of a Cubs fan than I am a Sox fan. But it's something you hear from Chicago White Sox fans quite often. Oh, we're not going to go unless the team's good. If we don't go, then they'll be forced to make the team good. You look at that. Look at that in the NHL. Look at the teams that don't draw well right now. Florida Panthers. They haven't drawn well in a long time. That certainly hasn't forced them to go out and spend money and get good. If anything, they'll get good because of the draft and, well, maybe now with Dale Talon in the mix and apparently Kevin Dineen becoming the head coach, they're certainly in a better situation than they had been. But they've been bad for a while, and fans not going has not made them good. Atlanta, another case. They had a great first half of the season, as we detailed in great detail on this program. To get a little redundant by using the word detail. I feel like I'm Gary Bettman, and I should say in the final analysis 30 times an hour, as he does on his weekly radio show. But in any event, we talked about the Atlanta Thrashers being one of the most exciting teams in the league, particularly maybe from the one-third mark of the season to the two-third mark of the season. None of that resulted in increased attendance. So we're talking about the lack of attendance has not necessarily led to that team having a long-term reversal of fortunes as far as the amount of money that's spent on the team. Columbus Blue Jackets, another example. You can go up and down the list. Really, if you are a diehard fan of your team and you want them to succeed, not going to the games is really not going to do anything other than ensure that at least the small part of revenue that you were bringing in to the team, it's going to ensure that that's not coming in. So again, I get being frustrated about the state of your team. Believe me, I do. Just because I went to all those games, Blackhawks games at the United Center throughout this last decade, let's say, throughout the 2000s, when the team was poor for the most part. That does not mean that I enjoyed the fact that they were bad, but it also meant that to me as a fan, if you are truly going to enjoy the highs, the highest of highs of your team, like winning a Stanley Cup, you have to experience and endure the lows for those highs to really mean anything. Something my dad and I talked about quite a bit when we'd be at those Blackhawks games with not very many people there, and it certainly was rewarding when they won last year, when they won the Stanley Cup. So that's my take on the whole situation as far as if there's blame, where it's to be placed. But the one thing I'll say, and I'll echo something that I've said on previous episodes of this show, is that no matter what, I really, really hope, and we've seen it already, but I just really hope at least any of the people that listen to this program are not in any way taunting Thrashers fans or are not... There's no joy to be derived from another diehard fan of the National Hockey League losing their team. I've said it before. I can't imagine what that would be like to have your team ripped away from you, a team that you invest your money, you invest your time, and you invest a great deal of your personal identity in becoming a fan of a team, particularly when it's at the highest level of a sport as the National Hockey League is. And for that to just all of a sudden be gone, when that's a huge part of your life, your social interaction, your relationship with your kids, all of those things, it's not easy. So I really hope that people will understand that and will really, they'll realize that just because there were a great deal less diehard Thrasher fans than there may be Montreal Canadiens fans or Toronto Maple Leafs fans or New York Ranger fans or Philadelphia Flyers fans, that doesn't change the fact that for those relatively small number of diehard fans, they love their team every bit as much as you love your team. And so just keep that in mind. And again, it's going to be a tough time for those fans, and you hope that they stay fans of the game, but you also know that it's very likely that they won't. So that's the situation as it stands going forward. A lot to be determined in Winnipeg. First off, will Craig Ramsey be back as coach? Will Rick Dudley be back in a general manager capacity? I'm of the opinion that on a strictly hockey standpoint, they deserve to, particularly Rick Dudley. I go back and forth as far as my thoughts on Craig Ramsey and whether he's the right fit long term for a young team like that, but I would like to see them given the chance. However, the True North Sports and Entertainment Group, which is obviously run to a very successful degree, both on and off the ice, the Manitoba Moose organization. They have a front office infrastructure in place that it's ready to slide in. And so Rick Dudley, who is going to be meeting at some point this week, it sounds like, with in person with the entire True North brass, he may find himself on the outside looking, and I don't think he'd be without a high-profile job in the league for very long if he is let go. But there's a very good chance that the new Winnipeg group is going to want their own people in place. Coaching-wise, it could be the same. It's all going to depend on whether they view Craig Ramsey as a better choice than some of the other coaches that are out there. I mean, do they view Craig Ramsey as a better coach for that group of players than for say Craig McTavish or for example a young at least young as far as not having much head coaching experience, say a guy like Mike Haviland, who has been in discussions over the last couple of years. I know he was involved. I believe he was actually interviewed for the New Jersey Devils job last summer, probably for the best that he didn't get that job with how poorly they started that season. Maybe Mike Haviland is a guy, particularly when you look at what he did with the Blackhawks when Joel Quenneville was ill this season, and Haviland had to coach several games, I believe 4 games, and went 3-1. Maybe he's an option, but you would think that Craig Ramsey, I would be surprised, I guess, if he is not there for, if they don't give him at least a year, considering that he has familiarity with the players that nobody else, obviously nobody else in the new Winnipeg organization has, or that of any other coach that's available they might bring in. So we shall see on that front. For Winnipeg, I really think it's a better situation from an on-ice perspective long term than if they had gotten the Phoenix Coyotes. The Coyotes may be a little bit further along in terms of right now talent, or at least performance or results, than Atlanta. But you look at what Atlanta has, guys like Zach Bogosian, Toby Enstrom, Dustin Byfuglien. It sounds as though Andrew Ladd, the Thrashers captain, is very likely to re-sign. Today he said he was very much looking forward to getting to Winnipeg, so that sounds like a good sign. There are certainly there are positive signs there. You can look at what they did during that stretch last season as something that they can build upon. They also have the 7th overall pick in the draft this year, so they should get, and again, the 7th overall pick, most likely not quite as good as what we may have seen in previous years. Again, on the draft show, and if we have a guest on, we'll be able to get a little bit better sense of the depth of the draft compared to previous years. But 7th overall pick, you would think they should be able to get somebody pretty darn good in that spot. Maybe that player will most likely not, especially in this year's draft class, will not be able to step right into the NHL, but you're going to get an impact player for down the road. So for Winnipeg, I'm sure it wouldn't have mattered today, as I record this on Tuesday night, the day of the announcement. It would not have mattered what franchise they were getting. NHL hockey is back in Winnipeg, and very, very happy for those fans who, as we talked about what the Thrashers are going through today, those fans went through that 15 years ago, and it's good to see those fans have something to be excited about in terms of the NHL game. Did want to get into a couple other quick things before we start talking about the Stanley Cup Finals, before I give my predictions. We'll go a little bit in depth to that. By the way, my plan is to come back and do another show mid-Stanley Cup Finals, probably after Game 2. So sometime in the Sunday, early Monday, sometime in that range, after Game 2, Game 3, somewhere along those lines. We have started to see in the NHL a bit of a flurry of activity as far as signings are concerned, particularly a lot of prospect signings. You've got guys, particularly guys from the 2009 draft class, that if they have not yet been signed, their eligibility, well, as you listen to this, their eligibility is probably just about expired. Really, the only The only prospect of note that is not yet signed as I record this, and it may by tomorrow's deadline, but it does not sound like a sure bet by any means, is Calgary Flames prospect Tim Erickson, who, if he is not re-signed, or if he's not signed, I should say, to his entry-level deal by Wednesday, he will become draft eligible once again, and one would think he would be, as a guy who's pretty much NHL ready in this year's draft class, he may even slot in as a top 10 draft pick. So that should be fascinating to watch as the week, well, really, as Wednesday goes on. But some non-prospect signings as well. A 5-year contract for Kyle Okposo with the New York Islanders. Another great move by the Islanders. A weird sentence to say, but locking up another piece of their core. We've seen them lock up Michael Grabner in previous weeks. Now Kyle Okposo. Matt Molson in the fold. They're doing a good job of locking up the guys that if they do get this new... the new arena deal, which that's something that we'll get into a little bit more in the off season as they go towards the referendum. I believe it's going to take place in August. That was the latest decision that came down on Tuesday. We'll get into that in some great detail. But if they're able to get that arena done and able to really get a little bit of life back in the franchise from a revenue and corporate standpoint, guys like Kyle Okposo, Michael Grabner, obviously John Tavares and others are going to be the guys to carry that franchise into the future. So good news on that front. A couple of retirements, two highly successful American-born players who most likely will not, I don't know, maybe there's an argument with I don't see either of these guys going into the Hockey Hall of Fame as a whole. I think they're obviously shoo-ins for the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. That's certainly nothing to sneeze at getting into that Hall of Fame. But on consecutive days, Brian Rafalski and Doug Waite both retiring. Interesting that Doug Waite's retirement speech was more typical of the retirement speeches you hear, whereas Brian Rafalski, it was very interesting to me. I did not know how religious of a man he was. It was interesting because you don't usually hear God and doing the Lord's work and those sorts of things. I laugh again just because those quotes, and those are some of his direct quotes, are just, they're not what you hear in usually in hockey retirement speeches. So thought that was interesting. Rafalski also, in his speeches, he was thanking people. I don't recall exactly who it was, if it was a pastor or who it was, but he thanked a religious advisor who he kind of credited, it seemed, with getting his life back on track this year spiritually. And so you wonder if there had been something going on that caused him to feel the need to reconnect with his religion, I guess, in that way. And it sounds like that is what he's going to be dedicating his life to. I didn't get a real strong sense in that retirement speech that, in that press conference, that he had a grand desire to stay in the game of hockey on a high level, at least right away. Whereas Doug Waite, immediately upon retiring, was named assistant coach and special assistant to the general manager, which, with all due respect to Doug Waite, and he's a stand-up guy from all reports, and I'm not saying he would be sort of a mole or a rat on the coaching staff, but if I'm a young player, and I know Matt Molson and John Tavares have lived with Doug Waite, but if I'm a young player, I'd be a little bit concerned about what I say around Doug Waite, considering that, yes, he's your assistant coach. A lot of times the assistant coach is sort of he's the player's coach. He's the good cop to the head coach's bad cop. But you also then, if I'm a player, you have to wonder, well, if I say something, is he going to go back to general manager Garth Snow? So who knows? Interesting stuff. It seems as though Doug Waite is likely going to be on the same plan as Ron Francis, who spent a couple of years after retiring behind the bench with Carolina and is now moving to a similar front office role to that of Doug Waite. Ron Francis continuing his work with the Carolina Hurricanes in that new role. Other transactions as well. This past weekend, Ryan Jones, who, again, as a fan, I was secretly hoping would sign a deal with the Chicago Blackhawks, but Ryan Jones re-ups with the Edmonton Oilers after a very good season for him with the Oilers, considering the minutes he had, getting well into double digits in goals, I believe 18 goals on the season. So a good deal, friendly cap hit on both sides. Also, Tuesday, as I record this, several signings, most notably Patrick Berglund re-signing a 2-year contract extension. Again, a very friendly cap hit for the St. Louis Blues, re-signing Patrick Berglund. As well, Jack Skilly re-signing with the Florida Panthers, a 2-year deal, earning a raise over the league minimum salary he made this past season, splitting time with the Blackhawks and the Panthers. Jack Skilly signing a 2-year deal worth $825,000 a year for each year in terms of the cap hit. Interesting in that, really, Dale Talon had to re-sign Jack Skilly when you look at what he gave up, that being Michael Frolik, who after a slow start in the regular season for the Blackhawks had a great playoff series against the Vancouver Canucks in round one and figures to be back. He's an RFA, but he figures to be re-signed by the Blackhawks and play a key role for them next year. And also, they traded very, very good goaltending prospect, that being Alexander Salak, who signed a 2-year one-way contract with the Chicago Blackhawks after a very successful season in Europe this year. He looks to be the front runner, one would think. Considering he got a 1-year deal, he looks to be the front runner to back up Corey Crawford in Chicago. As of now, they don't have anybody else really to come in and challenge. Obviously, Cristobal Huey and his large salary are going to be somewhere not on the Chicago Blackhawks next year, whether that ends up being in Rockford or he goes back over to Europe for another season. They also have, and they still have to re-sign in the offseason, but they have in the fold on a minor league level, Alec Richards and Hannu Toivonen. Alec Richards, 24 years old, certainly not NHL ready, showed some flashes, but also had some very bad games with Rockford. Hannu Toivonen, a guy with some NHL experience, but a very inconsistent goaltender. He's a little bit better in the second half for Rockford, but still, if I'm the Blackhawks, I'd feel more comfortable with a highly, highly touted young goalie like Salak rather than a journeyman, more AHL-level goalie like Toivonen. And I would expect that the Blackhawks will bring in somebody to, even if it's on a tryout basis, a veteran goaltender to challenge Salak for the backup. But I think Salak has a very good chance getting that job. So with that, we are going to talk a little bit about the Stanley Cup Finals. I'll say right now my prediction. I firmly believe that the Vancouver Canucks are going to win the Stanley Cup, as much as, again, as a fan, that may not be my first choice. I have absolutely zero rooting interest in this series at all. But I just think the Vancouver Canucks have too much. I think that the guys that have needed to get going, that being particularly the Sedins, have. Roberto Luongo has so far, particularly in a couple of the games late in the series against San Jose, after a shaky first-round series against Chicago, he has answered the bell and to this point proven that he can carry the load. And on the flip side, with Boston, more than anything else, and again, and we've got some of the same officials in the series, so maybe there just will not be any penalties called like there were in Game 7, Boston and Tampa, which I still, I don't know. Watching that game, there were certainly penalties on both sides that could have been called, and you wonder if Tampa had power plays, considering how good their power play had been, and considering how average Boston's penalty kill had been, that outcome may have been different. But with Boston's completely terrible, their anemic power play that has led them to even try Zdeno Chara, who has the hardest shot in the league, they've taken him completely off the point and put him in front of the net instead. That gives you an idea of the desperation on that power play unit, particularly when they have guys that you would think, in theory, guys like Milan Lucic, Patrice Bergeron should be able to be forces in front of the net on the power play, but to date in the playoffs, they have not been consistently. So you look at all of that, and I find it really hard to see how Boston is going to take four games in this series. I also look at how Tim Thomas played several. It's been his MO at times. I mean, he's going to be the Vezina Trophy winner. He could be a Hart Trophy candidate, but he also is a guy that, much like Luongo, seemingly only against the Blackhawks, Tim Thomas, against any opponent, he can be great, and he is great most of the time, but there is also the capacity for him to be very off, give up goals very early in games, as we saw against Tampa. And I don't know that Boston has the firepower to be able to overcome those sorts of performances. I just don't necessarily see it. Really, the only way I see Vancouver losing is if they sustain a couple of key injuries, serious injuries throughout the course of the playoffs. Like, one X factor, and it's not being talked about all that much, is the severity, I guess, or lack thereof, to the injury. It looks like a groin or hamstring injury in Game 7 to Ryan Kesler. Or I should say in the last game, not Game 7, but the last game of the series against the San Jose Sharks. And it's been about a week since he's played, so you would think he's healthy by now. But if something happens to Kesler, something happens to Luongo, although I think Corey Schneider, as long as he doesn't get a cramp on a penalty shot, he is more than capable of playing. But if something happens to one of those guys, if one of the Sedins go down, or if you have a couple of their top defensemen, if a Hamhuis goes down, if an Erhoff goes down, guys like that, they've been able to weather the storm in terms of defensive injuries throughout the season. But if they have a key injury or two like that, it could be trouble. But to me, you look at everything, Boston's propensity to get into penalty trouble, their average penalty kill, their inability to score on the power play themselves, and you couple that with the absolutely lethal power play right now, particularly as of late with Vancouver. You look at what the Sedins and Burrows have been able to do when the puck is on their stick. I think there are a lot more ways, there are a lot more scenarios where you can see Vancouver winning than where you can see Boston winning. That being said, you can't write Boston off. Boston's physicality, if they can keep it in check, it's something that Vancouver certainly hasn't seen yet in these playoffs. But in the end, I just think Vancouver has too much firepower. So we shall see. Like I said, Boston in five is my prediction. We'll check in after the first two or three games, see if I'm completely off base. I would love to get your feedback as far as your prediction. Who's going to win? How many games is it going to take? Maybe a Conn Smythe Trophy winner. Maybe it's a little bit of a cop-out. I'm going to say Ryan Kesler. I think it's... You could say maybe it'll end up being Luongo. My guess is this. It's going to be Kesler. Or if this series goes long, if it goes seven and Vancouver wins, and Tim Thomas, let's say, he steals two of those three wins that Boston gets in the series, we may be looking at the situation like we've seen a few times in the past where a goaltender from the losing team in the Stanley Cup Finals ends up winning the Conn Smythe Trophy, the Conn Smythe Award. So maybe that will happen. But yes, if you want to send in your predictions for the winner of the Stanley Cup Finals, how many games it'll take, Conn Smythe Trophy winner, feel free to do that at breakouthockey@radiostar.com. Send an email there or get a hold of me on Twitter. Also, love to get your thoughts on the Winnipeg-Atlanta situation. I guess if you are a fan that has an NHL franchise near you, what would you do if your team was moved, if your team left? And again, even if you're in Montreal, you're in New York, places, that team's not going to get moved. Just think about that. And if that happened, what would you do? Do you have a backup team? Do you have a team that you would shift your allegiances to? Would it take you a while to warm back to the game of hockey? How would you react? And I guess also, I know we have a very good listener base in Europe as well. We have listeners in the UK. We have listeners in Finland, Sweden. We have listeners in Poland. what are your thoughts? As I would imagine, if you're listening to this program, and some of you have told me, you follow certain NHL teams. Again, I don't think I mentioned Sweden. We have listeners there as well. If you follow an NHL team, does it affect you at all if they got relocated? If you, for some reason, are living in Europe and you follow the Atlanta Thrashers, now that they are moved to Winnipeg, does that matter to you? Similarly, if you live in Europe and one of the top European leagues has a team near you, what would you do? Again, similarly, if your team moved, would you find a new team? How would you get over it? Would you just move on to another sport? I'd be very interested to hear that as well. So, again, for that, send an email to breakouthockey@radiosar.com. So, with that, going to close out yet another edition of the Breakout Hockey Program. At least one more show while the season is going on. Like I said, we should be back about halfway or a little bit earlier than halfway through the Stanley Cup Finals. To take a look at everything that's happened so far, look at everything else that's happened throughout the league. Maybe we'll have a name that we can either praise or make fun of for the new Winnipeg franchise. So definitely look forward to all of that. Enjoy the hockey. Enjoy the Stanley Cup Finals, particularly if you are in Vancouver or Boston. As much as it pains me to say it, enjoy. Good luck to both of your teams, even though you knocked my teams out. Have fun. I can speak from experience as somebody who went to the Stanley Cup Finals last year here in Chicago. It is an amazing experience. There is nothing else in sport that can stand up to the live experience of being at the Stanley Cup Finals. I would say that if you have tickets to go to one of the finals games, go. Unless you are in desperate need to pay off medical bills or are just in desperate debt, if you can afford to not sell your tickets, if you have tickets and you can go, go. Do not sell your tickets, because it is, as a real diehard fan of the game, there is nothing else like it. So enjoy. For the rest of us that are fans of the other 28 teams in the league, even if you're bummed that your team is eliminated from the playoffs, watch the Stanley Cup Finals. Like I said, there's nothing like it. I'm sure you'll all be watching. So with that, I'll talk to you in about a week's time. Thank you for listening, and as always, particularly as we near what I imagine to be a wild celebration in either Boston or Vancouver, and as I would imagine a celebration that continues for many, many days in Vancouver, make sure that you do one thing. Please, keep it simple.